Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Today, here in Wales, it's actually not raining and it's not windy, so this is a very special day in November. And today we thought we'd talk about the role of the internet in the upcoming election. And this was a really good example, because I was trying to describe this to my mum, who doesn't really access the internet. She really relies on mainstream media and the BBC for everything that she sees. And it was striking me as I was talking to her that there's almost like there's two different groups now. There's the mainstream media people and the internet people, just to put it crudely. So this is just as an example, the recent flooding in Britain. This is what my mum saw. She saw good old Boris doing his cute little mop routine, playing up to the cameras, the BBC saying he's great, what a great chap for going to these areas of flooding in person to talk to these people and try and help them out. But what we saw was what actually happened, which is people who were actually there, the people who have been directly hit by this disaster, filming Boris Johnson on their phones and then loading it up to YouTube. And the reception that he got was not, "Oh, good old Boris, thank God we're saved, you've arrived, my hero." It was more along the lines of, "Fuck off, you asshole." And they were shouting at him. I mean, even white-haired old ladies calling him a filthy tow rag and an asshole. And like, the reception was really totally at odds with the mainstream media coverage of the event. And this is what we're getting from I call them the internet people.
Yeah.
It's crude, I know, but almost everybody, say 50% of us, have the ability to film what's going on in real time right in front of us and load it straight up to Facebook or YouTube or Twitter. And because we're seeing that, we're seeing what really happened, which is something which is really new. We've never really had it as much of this ever before as now, which is why I think Labour really has a chance, because the fight against the mainstream media is so strong.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to talk about the role of the internet in this upcoming election, and how, although there's many foot soldiers on the streets campaigning and leafleting and doing all that great work, it's like almost the real battle is being fought on the internet. But as well as this, of course, we are having sponsored posts from the Conservatives normally, spreading absolute lies and literal hate. Because they still thought I was living in Wolverhampton, I think there must be a very major battleground there. Well, I was quite surprised to find so many sponsored Labour hate posts in my Facebook feed.
You mean posts hating Labour rather than posts from Labour?
Sorry.
With
the
hate content.
Yes.
Which are kind of, they're trying to sort of avoid.
But it really was like pure lying and hatred. It was absolutely astonishing what they were doing. I actually made the mistake of filling out an online questionnaire where they revealed that
they
I'd
stopped.
Moved, and they immediately stopped.
Yeah.
So it's very targeted.
Yeah, Southwest. Wolverhampton South West is as to marginal. I mean, it was Enoch Powell's seat.
Yeah.
And then there was a Tory after Powell left the Tory party and joined the DUP, as it happened, I think it was, and represented a Northern Ireland constituency. But we had a Tory for a good long while. Then a Labour guy got in, Rob Maris, who's a sort of trade union solicitor guy, Blairite. Then I think he got thrown out, then he got back again, and there was another lawyer, an Indian solicitor, Paul Uppel, for a bit. And then I think it was the last lecture, or maybe the last
with
one.
Where's the nurse?
Eleanor Smith. Eleanor Smith, who was a Unison. I think she'd come up through Unison and was a big wheel in Unison. Might even been the boss of Unison. I think she was
Labour.
I think she was the boss of Unison going in, and she was like a black theatre nurse.
So that's the reason why the Midlands is such a battleground, because they do move around with the voting. It's not a Labour target, safe seat or a Conservative safe seat.
It's targeted.
So it is very targeted.
But you see Facebook algorithms, and they've got thousands of points of data on everybody who's on Facebook, which is like half the world's population or something. I don't know what the exact figure is, but it's billions.
Yeah.
There are billions of people with Facebook accounts that use it fairly regularly. A lot of people use it. It's huge in this country.
But they know a lot about you. The thing is, I think that the online community has grown up a lot in the last few years.
Yeah.
A few years ago, they fell for the lies, the sponsored ads, because they didn't really know what they were looking at. They just thought it was news being passed off as like real news and being passed around and all this is what's happening. But now, whenever the Conservatives come up with some really dirty online trick, they almost, for certainly from my what I'm seeing, they get immediately exposed by the public.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't do
it. And it really backfires on them now. In fact, I think they're digging their own graves by this slimy, lying online campaign that they've got. I think they're actually doing themselves harm, which is good.
I don't go on Facebook much these days.
You're more Twitter,
but
aren't you?
I've sort of, in the last few months, I've sort of been going on Twitter pretty well every day and tweeting. I mean, I've had a Twitter account for ages, but I tend not to bother. And trying to do philosophical stuff in 480 characters, or 280 characters, you know. Bit of a challenge. But I have been on since the politics have been eating up. And you can see the bots.
Oh, yeah.
You can just see.
That's very important to know as well. If you see one of these sponsored posts and it's got like 2,000 likes and thousands of comments. Yeah. If you look down, you can see, can't you?
Yeah, well,
from the troll farms, and which ones are actual real people?
Yeah, well, very often they've got now followers and a weird name, and it's just some kind of. It'll just say "Go Boris," Boris is the boy, or fuck Labour, or socialists and Nazis, or some kind of shit like that, you know. And because you can kind of flood a stream, you know, what do they call it, a thread. With stuff like that.
Like bot activity.
Yeah, and trolls.
But again,
trolls.
I think most people are wise to that now.
They are. They're really wise to it.
Because you can tell through a comment what's a real person and what's just a bot.
Yeah, but of course they're going to get more sophisticated. I mean, as I said in many previous podcasts, if you go back, listen to me talking about the internet, information is power. You know, whoever controls information controls the world. You know. And that's why there is a struggle for the internet and attempts to pull Facebook into line, because they've said, well, they don't care in some ways, and then other times they've tried to bring in some rules. But of course, there's such a volume of stuff, you can't have like the human control over it. There's too much sheer petabytes of data going backwards and forwards all the time, you know.
Yeah.
It can't be humanly controlled. It's algorithms and AIs and machine learning and all that kind of stuff. But I think Labour are pretty good on it. Like you say, the younger generation are more likely to vote Labour than your mum's generation, and less likely to read the mainstream media. The Daily Mail is losing circulation. All of the billionaire-owned press is losing circulation. The Tory Graph, the Telegraph, owned by the Barclay brothers, who are billionaires with a private island in the Channel Islands, losing money hand over fist. They're talking about, the rumour is that they're going to sell it to Steve Bannon. You know, the right-wing international coordinator for the far right, for the fascists. Daddy Mail, average age of the reader, he's 58. Losing circulation hand over fist. But they've never told the truth. They've always been owned by the ruling class. They've always been the mouthpiece, the propaganda sheets of capitalism, always. It's not like there's anything new. But of course, you know, Facebook is one of the biggest companies in the world. You know, the huge capitalist enterprises, apart from the military industrial, is the big Silicon Valley stuff, the digital, FAMGA, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. I mean, Amazon, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world. Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg's pretty damn rich. These are multi-billionaires. So, they don't have your best interest at heart either, particularly, do they? You know, and certainly the idea is that the youth will win it because they got the internet. Well, actually, the internet, I would say, was decisive in the Brexit election, you know, the referendum over UK membership of the EU. And Dominic Cummings brought in a load of geeks, physicists, and algorithm specialists, and they basically played the system, identified a group of voters that the Remain campaign had voted, and targeted them on Facebook.
Yeah.
And given how close it was, that was probably decisive.
Yeah.
And that was the Tories, you know, and of course they've got loads of money to throw at you. One third of British-based billionaires donate to the Tory party, and they don't just donate a few quid, they donate hundreds of thousands, if not millions. The average donation to the Labour Party is £26, you know, from grassroots. And actually I think that what it will be decisive in this election, it's two things. It is the internet. Social media are going to play a huge role from what I can see. But the door knocking, I think there's no substitute for it.
Yeah.
And Labour has got the foot soldiers, and they're pulling out all the stops. People are taking time off work to campaign and all sorts of stuff. It's fantastic, actually. And for me, the thing about Labour that I like is that it's a huge grassroots movement. I don't buy the criticism that it's just a protest movement and that Jeremy Corbyn is just a protester because he's been on the back benches all these years. I don't buy it at all. I think if you're going to do socialism and you're going to win elections in electoral politics, you've got to have huge grassroots, active grassroots. But also, I think if you're going to keep it all running properly, if you're going to actually make it work, if you're going to make the project of the Green New Deal work, you've got to have a huge grassroots that remains active after an election victory.
Yeah.
It's got to be a complete transformation of politics into an amalgam of state power and real, genuine, strong grassroots and vigorous debate and discussion and imagination and creativity. That's the way it'll work. It's a long shot, but it's the only hope, I think, for humanity. But yeah, you know, if you control the internet, given how many people are connected these days, you control everything.
Yeah, and as I said, I think the internet communities
they're fighting back,
definitely growing up.
Yeah.
In the sense that what they were falling for, say, you know, the kind of things that happened during the referendum.
Yeah.
Partly because what's his name, Cummings, stupidly publicised quite freely and was proudly how he manipulated people. He's exposed all his own tricks also. There's lots of documentaries these days about Cambridge Analytica and their sort of tactics.
Yeah.
So,
what was that very good one with it tells the story of Brittany Kaiser, who was like
The Great Hack, which is available on Netflix. It says really important to watch that because it really exposes their tricks on the internet. And so if you see this sort of thing and you know, you just don't respond to it, you don't pass it on, you don't energise it by interacting with it or anything like that.
I do, actually. I energise it by interacting with it, by saying how it's wrong and giving the evidence if I can, you know. just in the hope that you might, one person might go, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't take this stuff at face value. What was the other good thing that was quite illuminating? Was that drama with Benedict Cumberbatch plays Dominic Cummings, who was like he was the campaign director of Leave, Vote Leave, wasn't he? There was Leave UK, there was Leave.eu, and Vote Leave was the official campaign, and Cummings headed that up, didn't he? Yeah. As well as the campaign, he was the technocrat. That's his thing. He's manipulating people. He lives to manipulate.
Even though he's working for a group of people who he publicly acknowledges do not care about the public at all, but he's still happy to work for him. That's the sort of person he is.
Yeah. He was a guy who was held in contempt of Parliament for refusing to give evidence to a parliamentary select committee on culture, media and sport that were looking into just the way the internet works. And the role of the internet in the referendum. He didn't even turn up, and they held him in contempt of Parliament. But there's no punishment for it. But the guy is now Boris Johnson's chief advisor, private advisor at number 10. Yeah. But there's a great video of Cummings giving a lecture to some sort of think tank, inverted commas. It's just called Why Did Leave Win? And he goes over how they did it, and how they mobilised nostalgia and all the rest of it with, the Take Back Control slogan.
We did a podcast about that. A whole podcast.
There's a podcast on that if you want to have a look. But he just stands there and says, "This is how we did it." This is how we did it, and there's this infamous bit that's gone viral.
They're led by donkeys, people projected on like nice and big and loud, didn't they?
Outside the Tory party conference, they projected this clip of Dominic Cummings saying the Tory party doesn't give a shit about ordinary people, and ordinary people are now getting wise to the fact.
And he just said offhand, doesn't he?
The thing about the bloke, he's got no inhibition, or any kind of shame or thought.
Or empathy.
What did David Cameron describe him as, like the psychopath in chief or something like that? I don't know the exact words were. He's a nasty kettle of fish, in my honest opinion. The guy, and somebody said to him, do you feel guilty? He said no, about manipulating people. He lives to manipulate. He thinks it's perfectly, that's what you do. You win by manipulating. He's like a pure sophist rhetorician, And I think his disregard for truth, just that ordinary concept of truth, where if you say something, it's true. If it accords with reality in some demonstrable way, we call that true. That's what we use the word for. There's no sense or care for that. And none of the lead Tories have got the faculty for recognising truth in that ordinary sense either. None of them. I can demonstrate it. Gove. Johnson particularly. Johnson's like Donald Trump. Donald Trump's never had it, I don't think they've ever had it, some of them. I think the way they, the private education system in the UK produces people like that. I think that's what it's for. Yeah. It's great. I mean, Led by Donkeys projected it on a building outside the Tory party conference, like 40, 50 feet high, on a loop.
I love them.
Cummings, I love them as well. Cummings just saying all that stuff,
Yeah.
So people are getting wise. That's on the plus side. But, there's like it's like an arms race with the algorithms. I mean, the geeks have been fighting back. All the stuff about Bitcoin and attempts to produce alternatives to Facebook, in which you actually get paid for your data, for your content, because basically Facebook, we give Facebook our data and they monetize it through advertising, targeted advertising. Advertisers love it because it's highly targeted, because the Facebook algorithms, the artificial intelligence or the machine learning, has got points of data on everybody, thousands of points of data on everybody. What they did with Cambridge Analytica and all those lot, I don't know whether it was them particularly, but what the Cummings lot did, they got Facebook to, I don't know how this worked, but Facebook put out a questionnaire, you fill it in and it gives them all the data, and from that data they can tell your sex, your age, how you vote and what your level of education is, you know. So they were like, and they have thousands of data points on pretty well any sort of moderate Facebook user, which means I can target advertising extremely accurately. So advertisers love it. That's how they make the money. That's the kind of, that's why it's a billion, multi-billion dollar company. But we actually give them, if you look in the contract as well that you sign, the small print, you give them your data. Yeah. And the whole thing only works if there's content. And we provide the content. We provide the content for nothing. No content, no Facebook. So where's our share? Boris Johnson gets paid. Does he get paid 200,000 quid for an article in the or a year or something? For his
£250,000 a year he
for his naff articles in whatever it is. What does he write for the Tory Graph? Absolutely naff fucking articles. He's a bit witty, and that's
just made up.
Yeah, you know. So,
and in an interview, he described that money as peanuts.
Yeah, shows what a wanker he's done it. You know, but of course, you know, we're providing content to Facebook. I should think, being as it's making them loads of money, where's our share?
Yeah.
Unless that, oh well, you get to use the platform. They provide the platform. In exchange, we give them our data, which is extreme. Data is the new gold, which is extremely valuable to them because they can mine the data for, in order to do extremely effective targeted advertising, which of course politicians are using. So, but I mean, the geeks are fighting back. I mean, things like Steemit and Mines and they're all highly flawed, in my opinion. But their attempts to sort of make the platform far more neutral, you know, and for you to get paid for giving you content.
So coming back to the theme of this podcast of how the internet is going to, or what influence the internet will have on this upcoming election,
well, it depends, I think, on what's going on behind the scenes, you know, because the thing that Dominic Cummings pulled for Leave, for Vote Leave, and for the Leave campaign in general, worked because the other side didn't know what they were doing, because they'd identified a group of voters they could target extremely precisely.
But this time,
and they had loads of money.
I think they will have put moles in all like different constituencies, watching what they do and how they target people in different constituencies, and they will be reporting back.
Yeah, I think the sort of native wit of digital natives, in other words, people who were born into the internet, people who have never known not having the internet and the mobile phone and the computer. Unlike old farts like me, you know. I mean, I was pretty well into it from pretty near the beginning, but I was an old fart when it started, you know. and it was totally alert to its potential. But we don't know what's going on. There is an arms race, is what I want to say. There's
an arms race
and a struggle.
Yeah.
And there'll be attempts, legal attempts to control, which will fall flat in many ways because they're transnational. They're utterly transnational. Google's even talking about it. I don't think it might even have done it, putting its servers out in international waters at sea, or on satellites, or on the fucking moon, whatever, you know. Which is the way these Silicon Valley people think. They're kind of anti-government, anarcho-capitalists, a lot of them. And, they don't want any rules about what they can do. And I have a certain sympathy, but also I'm with that, because governments do bad things. But I think Google is so capable of doing bad things.
Yeah.
And Facebook particularly, that you kind of think, well, where the fuck are we, you know? I mean, you've definitely got to fight back. But Twitter, I would say, I mean, because it happens really fast, Twitter. And I think if you're determined not to live in a bubble, you can get quite a good sense of what's going on. It's like plugging into the unconscious of the nation.
Because you follow all like people you really hate, don't you?
Oh yeah,
I follow what they're doing and keep an eye on.
I follow all the big people to see how they're doing, you know.
All the evil doers.
Yeah, I follow Boris Johnson. I follow Mark Gove. I follow Nigel Farage. I follow Donald Trump. I follow John Bolton. Of course, he's been sacked now. I keep my eye on the American stuff as well, but I follow, you know, Bernie Sanders and Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, and obviously Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell, pretty well all the Labour Party candidates. But I follow Rees-Mogg. I get quite a good cross-section. And what I've noticed is if I get a post from Boris Johnson, I get a tweet from Boris Johnson, sometimes he'll just tweet, "Get Brexit done with a photograph." You know, it's like they've got the interns just fucking sitting there clicking away. And then I scroll through the comments, and most of the favourable ones are just obviously bots, and they don't actually really say anything or give any arguments.
Yeah.
But at least two-thirds of the posts are just, you know, links to articles refuting what he said, exposing what he said as lies. Some of it just downright, you know, calling him a fuckwit and all the rest of it. But the Twitter sphere are not letting him get away with it.
I've seen that on Facebook as well.
Yeah, and this is not just... Obviously, if some kind of Labour waller retweeted a Boris Johnson tweet with a comment, you'd expect a load of favourable... You'd expect all their mates to get on and say, like, you know, or yeah, he's a fuckwit and blah, blah, blah. The bubble phenomenon. But I actually get Boris Johnson's tweets, which... Not filtered
directly from him, yeah.
Yeah, from Boris.
From the source.
Everybody fucking hates him. Jeremy Corbyn, same thing. Everybody loves him. And now they kept telling me, if you watch any sort of mainstream media, if you watch like a BBC news item, on I don't watch the BBC because I haven't got a licence and I don't want to be fined, and that can fuck off. But I'll watch bits on the YouTube and so forth. And according to them, Jeremy Corbyn's deeply unpopular and Boris Johnson's massively popular. Jeremy Corbyn turns up at the University Theatre in Sheffield for this kind of question time thing, where the three main party leaders got half an hour and to field questions with an audience and all the rest of it. Good audience, tough questions all around. And there was fucking thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people waiting outside the entrance to kind of to cheer Jeremy Corbyn on. Thousands of them. Johnson has to go around the back everywhere. But I keep tweeting, oh yeah, there's Jeremy Corbyn, that deeply unpopular bloke. Well, okay, maybe, you know, the silent majority does hate him, hate Corbyn, maybe. I mean, you know, the maths. This doesn't prove anything mathematically, obviously. But... you know, the internet can sort of, you can see these.
Definitely give you a different view.
Because what you've got is, you've got what you mentioned, you know, the somebody photographs Johnson on an iPhone, you know, getting a bad reception when he goes and pretends he's going to be interested in what's happening to the plebs. And Dominic Cummings has told us that he's not interested in what happens to the plebs. But he's got to do it for, like, appearances. And now people are recognising this and calling him a footwit. All this is kind of out there on the internet because of what you would call, like, loosely called citizen journalism.
Yeah.
And this is where the internet can score, you know.
Definitely.
And I don't know how the platforms can stop it. And if they did try to stop it, what's to stop me, you and half a dozen other people doing a fundraiser and buying a fucking server that'll handle stuff like that and getting it out there?
Yeah.
One way or the other, it's just going to be very, very difficult.
That's a very good
stop.
Term. I haven't heard that before. Citizen journalism.
Yeah.
And we can all do it.
Well, I know it's mostly Snapchat. You know, here's a selfie of me. Here's a selfie of me in my new shoes. And blah, blah, blah. I know a lot of it's on that level. But that's fair enough. You know, you do what you like. You know, it's there. It's fun. It's supposed to be. But it has this possibility, this citizen journalism. And, of course, there are now plenty of alternative news outlets. And some of them are very, very good. All the best journalists are there. If you want to say John Pilger, Chris Hedges, Abby Martin, Max Blumenthal, the Navarra guys. You know, okay, theirs is a kind of long form talky piece stuff, but different. You know, yeah. And not the mainstream media, and funded by people giving them a tenner here and there, you know, and doing it for the love of it and the passion of it. And so the internet opens all that up as well. On the one hand, you've got Facebook manipulation. On the other hand, you've got citizen journalism and the best alternative journalism of a pretty good quality. It's getting out there, and okay, there's a big struggle on YouTube, you know. YouTube, if they don't like people's political opinions are a bit too far one way or the other, they'll kind of demonetise them and stuff like that. And they tend to do it to the left more than to the right, you know. I mean, the price for all this, as I say, is that you get some real fucking hair-curling hate content, you know, and there's absolutely tons and tons and tons and tons of it. I think, like, Minds.com was a good idea. And, you know, monetising a platform, complete free speech within the bounds of legality. Obviously, it can get sued in various places for defaming people. Or, obviously, certain things you can't publish because it's a crime to publish them. But within them bounds, they've got the free speech. So you're thinking, all right, free speech, fair enough. But it's like this kind of a... It's like a ghetto for fucking hate speech, you know. I mean, there's plenty of good stuff on there, plenty of left stuff, plenty of good music, plenty of stuff about art and all the rest of it. But the stuff that gets boosted and, like, pushed into your stream, it's fucking hate speech, you know. It's like real full-on neo-Nazi stuff, and you know, high quality memes and low quality fucking content, you know, like an absence of argument and facts and figures and all the rest of it. So the internet's a parson's egg in some ways, you know. What a two-ended stick.
Yeah.
So, but I think this election's going to be, it's playing a huge part.
But I think I actually think without it, without the citizens' journalism and without this ability to communicate with people, the Conservatives will probably win again.
Yeah, well, there's an enormous pushback that is getting seen by a lot of people. Against the slurring of Corbyn, you know, immense pushback against it.
Yeah, and it is just vile. It sort of exposes them.
Yeah,
like how nasty they are about him and about Labour and how and the obvious lies. It just really makes them look.
Yeah.
Just exposes them for what they are.
Well, we haven't had a bloody revolution in this country since the Civil War, you know. We've had a few skirmishes, the miners' strike in 85, was it, and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was a bit nasty and all the rest of it. But you need to realise that the status quo, capital, the 1%, will stop at nothing. And I do mean nothing to keep their dominance, to keep their wealth and power, including bombing countries, including assassination, destabilising governments. You know, what's just happened in Bolivia? You know, this is straightforward US-led CIA playbook coup, military coup. You know, they'll stop at nothing. 23 people have been killed already there, at least. You know, by the police. So, we need to realise that they will stop. When push comes to shove, they'll stop at nothing.
And Peter, you know, I hear people
lying
saying, with the lying thing, I was thinking this myself, like, when this was really, like, starting to become more of a reality, that there was definitely an election coming, and the lying was ramping up, and I was thinking to myself, how are they getting away with this? I mean, it's provable lies, like, especially things with the BBC, where they deliberately... replace footage with footage from years ago to make Boris Johnson look good, to hide what he actually did, stuff like that. Like, how are they getting away with this? And the things that, you know, when they actually stand up sort of and do their speeches either on television or in interviews or to crowds, and they are absolutely lying through their teeth.
Yeah.
You're thinking, how are they getting away with this? And I think it's really important for everybody to know that there are no laws against politicians lying to the public. They really can say anything and completely get away with it. You have to remember this. There's nothing stopping them to say we're all going to be living on the moon and like eating cheese every day.
Well, they come out with that
and
thing.
We'll be fine.
Everybody's going to pay $2,500. I don't know what some kind of number more tax.
They just make up these figures.
And it's complete lies.
Yeah.
But then now if you keep, Hitler, Goebbels, one of these nasty characters said, you just keep repeating it, and it becomes the truth.
Yeah.
Inverted commas.
But now the public are pulling them up over and over again about the lives and exposing them.
Yeah.
There's a chance for people to go, oh, yeah, that's their lying there.
It's hard work. It's an uphill struggle.
You've got to keep at it all the time.
It has to be done.
Because they just come up with a new lie every day.
Guess what they did? That question time thing. It's a woman asked Boris Johnson a question about telling the truth. Says it's important to tell the truth as a prime minister. And he sort of like went, waffle, you know. And everybody laughed.
At the thought of Boris Johnson saying it's important to tell the truth, they all just laughed in his face, didn't they?
They laughed, and then there was applause for the questioner. And obviously it went out live. But on the 1 o'clock news the following day...
That's BBC.
The BBC edited out the laugh and just put the clap. And a few people picked it up because put them on Twitter in a short clip, side by side. Here it is as it went out live. And here it is as they reported it on the 1 o'clock news and then the 4 o'clock news or whatever.
Yeah. It's just so...
The idea that this is a reliable, principled, highly trustworthy outlet. It's just fucking, it's just blown out the water. It's a propaganda fucking wing of the establishment. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely no doubt about it. But the internet was able to expose that, and thousands of people have seen that. Probably millions of people have seen that. Because it went viral. And then loads of people, I'm getting it 10 times because everybody's retweeting it.
Yeah.
So you retweet it, and if you've got 1,000 followers or 10,000 followers or 500,000 followers like some of these people, it's getting out there, And the BBC probably has acted illegally there.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I really want them to be done for what they're doing.
So that's, the internet, big role. What would the conclusion be here? The internet is going to play a big role. We have to be aware that there's an arms race, and the Tories, or at least the right wing, weaponised it very effectively in the referendum. And that's fairly well documented by now. I was saying, and I forgot to mention, I think Labour's got very good IT people. And that the youth are kind of digital natives, and they're more inclined to vote Labour. And you can see that when you, particularly on Twitter, which is very fast moving, you can see how that's working. It will be decisive, and it'll be an ongoing site of struggle. It may even become the site of struggle in many ways over the next years. A lot will depend on how the technology develops, on how all the blockchain stuff and how easy it is for citizen journalism to continue. And how it's going to be censored by the people that actually control the pipeline. Remember, the huge tech companies are massive capitalist industries. And they don't have your interests at heart. But also the people that own the infrastructure, there's the question of controlling the pipelines, the fibre optics and the actual infrastructure. That's of course owned by huge capitalist concerns. Over and against that, you've got the development of encryption, blockchain, moves by people of all kinds of political persuasions to put in alternatives to Facebook. It's going to be a site of struggle. We're already seeing that.
Yeah.
And there'll be all sorts of players as well. It won't be like a two-sided thing. It'll be a multi-actor conflict, I would say. But it's going to end up being decisive in this election, I think, in many ways. Yes. But the door knocking, the thousands of boots on the field,
yeah, is definitely. Because the thing about the door knocking really is they manage to contact in the people who aren't seeing the like what one could almost describe it as the real news, which is coming out through citizen journalism, through people actually on the ground filming what's actually happening in front of them. If those people who don't have access to that can, you know, actually talk to somebody on the doorstep, I think it's helpful.
What the Czech is doing is, even though Labour's got like a lot of boots on the ground, there's a lot of households. There's 40 plus million voters, you know. But what the Czech enables them to do is to say, this is a marginal seat. I mean, the last election was decided by 2,700 votes. In certain, this is a lot of the way the system works. 2,700 votes could have put Corbyn in number 10 in 2017. It's the same in America. It's three states, you know. Yeah. It was 700,000 votes put Trump in. He didn't actually win the popular election because they've got the stupid electoral college system. So the Czech tells you where to put your effort, and even though you've got a lot of boots on the ground, you do not want to waste your effort. It's people's time. Yeah. It's money. You know, and the Labour Party, it's got money, but it ain't got money like the fucking Tories have got money. I mean, one third of billionaires in the UK are donating to them huge amounts of money. They've got massive amounts of money to throw at campaigns. They haven't got boots on the ground, though. You know, what was the last membership of the party? It was like 190,000. I think that's an exaggeration. Average age, like 60. I don't know. You know.
But how many people have registered to vote in the last couple of months?
Loads. Under 35 or 34, something like that. It's I don't know, 1.5 million or something. It's these kind of, don't quote me on the exact figures, but it's these kind of order of figures. Altogether, in the last month, it's like well over 2 million. There was 300,000 people registered to vote on Friday.
Wow.
It's huge. It's a massive.
When's the deadline? Do you know? I can't remember.
Tomorrow, I think, or the day after. So if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. You might be too late by the time this goes out. Anyway, just that says something. There's something afoot, you know. There is something afoot. And you get the polls, they say, like, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's unpopular, and it's just don't make any sense. The polls in 2017 had Labour on 20%. They right up to the on the day of polling, they polled 40%. They were 50% fucking wrong. Do not take any notice of the polls. The polls are, YouGov is owned by a Tory MP and a representative stroke apparatchik working for another prominent Tory.
And their sort of mission for that was to be to, not to report the polls, but to lead them, wasn't it?
Yeah. The basic idea behind the polls is to form opinion, not to. To identify it.
But that was the YouGov statement, wasn't it?
They were using it to
manipulate people's opinion rather than...
I think behind the scenes you'll have heard that, put it like that. Yeah. But certainly don't take any notice, they were wildly wrong. Wildly wrong. But the other thing, I mean, they're saying they've been... And the other piece of lies, they've been going out the Institute for Fiscal Studies, the IFS, which claims it's not party political. It isn't. It doesn't follow any party. It's not funded by any party. It's a think tank. And it's generally... It's the one that gets quoted by the press and the BBC. And they're saying that the Labour manifesto, that the spending... And, of course, Labour have put out two booklets, one for the manifesto and one with the costings. The grey book's got the costings in. And now they're going to raise the money with bonds and blah, 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 blah. And this think tank, this IFS, is saying, oh, these are terrible, these figures are just all completely wrong. And they're getting quoted as though they are the reliable source. And they're not. You have a little dig around. And even though they don't support the Tories or the Labour, they are committed to neoliberalism. They take all the assumptions of neoliberalism as read, without question. Of course, they are questionable, especially now. What is happening now if you want a big picture stuff, is that now liberalism as an ideology is now, it's now in meltdown. Okay, it'll take some time. It's dominated for 40 years.
Just describe what neoliberalism is again.
Well, I always,
just for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah, I always say, like Mrs. Thatcher's mantra, there is no such thing as society, there are only individuals. Sort of sums it up. It's a belief in free markets, no government interference. In practice, it was used to reduce, or basically smash, trade union power across the world, across the developed world. Free capital movement all across the planet. And that's basically it.
So basically it's they're supporting an idea which is for the few, not the many.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But with all the ideological apparatus to excuse that and say that why it's good for everybody, because all boats will rise. It's trickle-down economics. The idea is you let some people get stinking rich, they'll spend some of their money. And the plebs, us, will get some of the crumbs. The actual truth of the matter is that it turned out that it's a trickle-up system. The divide between the very rich and the very poor has grown fantastically, globally and within nations, certainly within this nation. Even though the general level of dire poverty has perhaps decreased a little. You know, but the idea that it's going to deliver the world from poverty is ludicrous. There's people, there's billions of people living on $2, $3, $4 a day. If this system was so great, they've had 40 years to put that right, and they haven't managed it. And anyway, this Institute for Fiscal Studies is basically a neoliberal think tank. In other words, it doesn't question any of the base assumptions of neoliberalism, and they're all questionable, and they are all now being questioned. So I don't take any notice of that. But just to strongly advise against it, you know, I think the economic foundation for the Labour manifesto is pretty sound. But of course, the proof's going to be in the actual attempt to do it, because all economics is ideology. There's always a political and value commitment in any economic system that somebody works through. The world economy or the national economies are not fully describable by any theory. There's always an indeterminism. Theory is undetermined by the facts. And that's just the nature of the beast. And that is where the room for value and politics to be a part of any economic system. So, you know, there's no sort of objectivity about any of this. But it's worth trying, and there's a good chance of some success. And if there's good success, you've got the foundation for taking things even further for the human project. As far as I can see, there's not much hope at all. And I'm talking extinction. Unless Jeremy Corbyn wins, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was having a little, just a little look at Boris Johnson's voting record about environmental matters, and he's consistently voted against anything that would help the environment ever.
Yeah, well,
so
he's,
just everyone know that.
He's a shill for big oil, of course
he
is.
Yeah, of course he is, yeah.
Anyway, we've been going for 50 minutes, believe it or not.
Yeah. Okay, so let's wind up, and I think I would just like to urge anyone, just in the few weeks that we've got left, if you are engaging in social media, just to do your little bit for the citizen journalism, and especially if you see any posts which are helping to expose the lies, particularly of the Conservatives, then or any other party that's lying, pass it on. Just click share. If you want to put a comment with it yourself, then that would be great. But just spread it around, because I think the thing that we, just as individuals, can help here is to expose the lies and stop people being manipulated by them, which is going to be very much the deciding factor as to what happens in this general election. Anyway, so I hope you found that interesting. We're just clambering down the mountain now. We're on a very muddy bit of path, so we're going to be hopefully not going to fall over. All right then, speak to you soon.
Bye.